give your talk. Ah, Jessica's giving a talk.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jessica Davis from Colorado State University. And this project is in partnership with Hawassa University in Ethiopia and with a small fertilizer company in Colorado called Thin Air Nitrogen Solutions. But before we get into these details, I want to just frame the situation. Here at this meeting, we've been hearing at a number of sessions about the importance of nitrogen fertilizer, about the deficit for nitrogen in Africa in particular, and about some of the things that people are doing to try to improve access to nitrogen in Africa. Things like increased subsidies for fertilizer, improving roads, trying to incorporate legumes into cropping systems to a greater degree. Well, in this project, we're taking a very different approach. Our goal is to empower farmers to basically produce their own nitrogen fertilizer by using cyanobacteria. And so the idea is that they would take the worst land on their farm and dig a pond and culture cyanobacteria in that pond. And then they could harvest the cyanobacteria for application as fertilizer. So with that intro, we'll get started on this presentation. So we're working in Ethiopia. Ethiopia is one of the African countries with the highest rates of nutrient depletion and the lowest fertilizer use rates in all of Africa. And the cost of fertilizer is 2 to 3 times what it is here in Ethiopia. And then after you buy it, it has to be transported. And because of the infrastructure being the way it is, those transportation costs are about 7 times as high as they are here. So you can see why people wouldn't be fertilizing much with those kind of prices. In addition to that, there's a bureaucratic system, of course, for getting access to fertilizer. So that if you want fertilizer and you have the money to pay for it, after you order it, it takes about 9 months to get it. So you need to plan ahead. Okay. So with those kind of constraints, what we're trying to do is basically skirt all of that and empower farmers to produce their own fertilizer. So we're working on developing a system that smallholder farmers can use on their own farms using cyanobacteria. The potential outcomes are quite large, we think, not just to improve access to fertilizer and avoid importing fertilizer, avoid the costly transportation and the bureaucracy, but of course to increase yields and to increase incomes and improve nutrition as a result of those increased yields. That's our big vision. Now, just a quick introduction to cyanobacteria. Cyanobacteria are commonly called blue-green algae. Maybe you know them by that name, but they're really not an algae. They're not a plant. They are bacteria. And what's unique about them is that they do photosynthesize like plants, but they can also fix nitrogen from the air. So they use the energy of the sun to fix the nitrogen. So this gives a little bit of an outline of what we're going to be talking about in the next few minutes. I'll start with a brief introduction about our research partnerships in Ethiopia and about developing a culture collection. Our intent is to use Ethiopian cyanobacteria in Ethiopia. First of all, we don't want to introduce foreign species, right? But secondly, that we want the species that we're using to be adapted to the local situation. So it makes sense to develop first a culture collection of Ethiopian cyanobacteria. And then once you have the collection, you need to select the optimal cultures. And I'll mention several things that we're doing to try to determine which culture might be optimal to move to the field. And then finally, we'll visit a little about moving from the laboratory to the field and to on-farm production. So this slide just gives you a quick idea about our partnerships at Hawassa University. Do I have a pointer here?
You can use a mouse.
Oh, yeah, through here. There we go. So this is Endel Kachu, Endelka Chu Woldemeskel is an associate professor of soil microbiology at Hawassa University. And this is his team that we're working with. Solomon is his research associate, but just recently completed a bachelor's degree in economics. So he's helping us on the economic side. I won't be talking about that today, but it's critically important to us that this truly be accessible for farmers to do, so that we're using, the intent is to use all local materials and keep this as cheap as possible. And now we have three graduate students working on this project with us as well. So as I mentioned, we started the culture collection just focusing on the Hawassa area of Ethiopia that's in southern Ethiopia. It's in the Rift Valley, an area with lots of lakes. So we've sampled around those lakes from farmers' fields, especially from fields that tend to be swampy or wet, in order to get a good collection of cyanobacteria. We, in general, in the work that we've been doing on this topic, about 9 out of 10 soil samples that we take result in a culture. And so it's not hard to find cyanobacteria. Now we'll move to the stage of looking at how are you going to compare these cultures and select cultures that would be able to be hardy and grow well in the field. So this slide shows a comparison of three cultures. This top line is, it says H4, that is a Colorado culture. It's our best growing cyanobacteria from Colorado. And then these two are Ethiopian cultures. You can see the Ethiopian cultures aren't growing quite as well as the this one that we use as our standard best culture, at least not to this date. Today, I think, is day 14 in this experiment, actually, so we'll be running this for a little bit longer. We'll see if this gap gets closer or if they stay that far apart. But I went ahead and included this slide in here because it's important to us that, you know, if this is going to be economically feasible, they've got to grow well, and they've got to fix a lot of nitrogen. Another really critical component is cyanotoxins. You may be aware that cyanobacteria can emit toxins, and we're not about, I don't want to go down in history for being the person who spread cyanotoxins all over Ethiopia. So we are making sure that the bacteria that we're using do not have cyanotoxins. So this slide just shows you the results of our ELISA testing for microcystins and saxitoxin. And you can see none of them even registered positive values in the ELISA test. So the cyanotoxins came in at under the detection limits for these tests. We also look at temperature, and because we want to select bacteria that grow well at the range of temperatures you would see outside, right? So both on the cold and the hot extremes. So what you've got here in this slide is the growth rates. I didn't mention how we measure growth, but we basically measure the greenness of the sample, and then we've correlated that to the biomass. So that's a very good correlation and a non-destructive way to measure growth. We looked at four different temperatures, from 25 up to 34 degrees. And you can see the best ones were at 27 and 29 degrees C. 25 was a little below that. And down here at the bottom, 34, we kind of fried those babies, right? They didn't grow so well at that hot of a temperature. And that's important for us to know. And this is, of course, the temperature of the water. So it's possible the temperature of the air could be that hot and that they would still be fine. In addition to growth, we look at nitrogen fixation rates, and this is shown in this next graph on the right-hand side. And what you can see there is that the temperature from 25 to 29 degrees really did not make a difference in nitrogen fixation, but up there at 34, we had very little nitrogen fixation going on. So we're using this approach to select cyanobacteria that will be viable through the range of temperatures you'd find outside. Another important characteristic is water source. Okay, so what water are they going to use? Where is it going to come from? And that kind of question. And what effect do organisms that might be in the water have on this whole process? So what you see in this picture is the setup that we developed at CSU for evaluating different characteristics and their impacts on cyanobacteria. We call it a light box because it has these lights around the outside. I love doing these high-tech experiments where you can get everything you need at Home Depot. But and we also buy out the pet stores quite a lot in this experiment. But because there's a lot of, we grow cyanobacteria in fish tanks and use pumps for fish tanks and that kind of thing. But what we've done in Colorado is compare distilled water with tap water, with water from the Poudre River that flows through Fort Collins. And this shows the results of that work. Again, with the growth being shown on the left-hand side, the blue line is the distilled water. And so we had, there was a tendency for the distilled water to do the best in terms of growth. However, that wasn't significant because of the large amount of variability around those means. Then when you look at nitrogen fixation, the distilled water and the tap water actually were not any different in terms of nitrogen fixation, though the river water had some competing organisms and predators that like to eat cyanobacteria, so that had a negative effect. So Hiwassee University is going to be doing a similar study comparing, again, with distilled water, but also with groundwater and surface water from Lake Hiwassee. After doing the lab work, we've moved to the field for the first time this summer. And what you see here is two of our 100-gallon ponds for growing cyanobacteria. This work was done on a farm near Fort Collins. These two tanks, as you can see in the picture, they're in a hoop house. And we have two in a hoop house, and we had two outside. And we actually originally weren't planning to use a hoop house in this experiment, but because the farmer had one and had some space in it, we decided it was worth giving it a try. So you can imagine, you know, in a hoop house, you tend to have warmer temperatures, less evaporation. The night temperatures should be warmer as well. So there are some potential advantages. And it was true that the cultures grew better in the hoop house than they did outside. However, outside, they actually were killed from the high light intensity. But we really need to repeat this in Ethiopia because Colorado, because of the elevation and the solar radiation is very high, and we might not have this issue in Ethiopia that we have in Colorado. But we are doing a study. See my high-tech Home Depot approach to research here. But what we're doing is we're comparing different hoop house covers to see the effect on the growth of the cyanobacteria. This slide diagrams for you what we think the system design might look like. We still need some more time in developing this method before pushing this out to farmers in Ethiopia. But basically, the idea is that there would be paired ponds, that there would be a growth pond and a settling pond. So you'd grow your cyanobacteria in the first pond, and in there you'd have to supply a micronutrient solution to meet the needs of the cyanobacteria. You'd need to aerate and keep the pond mixed to have good growth and nitrogen fixation. And then when you're ready to harvest, you'd allow it to settle, and you could pump the liquid solution back off for use in producing more cyanobacteria, and then harvest just that settled cyanobacteria at the bottom. Now, you could harvest it two different ways, depending on the situation. If a farmer has irrigation, which is true for irrigated vegetable production in southern Ethiopia, they could fertigate that cyanobacteria back just through the irrigation system and not even have to dry it. But they could also let it dry in the sun and then apply it to soils or sell it to their neighbor. And that's the direction we're going in trying to develop this method. I'd like to acknowledge our team. You saw our Hiwassee University team was all male. We have had an all-female team in Colorado to make up for that. Got to keep these things in balance, right? And we'd like to acknowledge the funding sources that are critical, of course, to our success. Thanks for listening. I'd be happy to take any questions.